Good afternoon. This is Richmond Independent Radio News for Friday, May 20th, 2005. I'm Lauren Ball. Today we'll be hearing about a group of Richmond citizens who filibustered to protest federal abuses of power.
I think people need to be aware of what's going on right now and aware that they have a stake in this fight.
We'll hear from Mayor Wilder as he talks about how Richmond can face the challenges ahead.
We are poised to be something that doesn't exist anywhere else in this country. There is no more vibrant metropolitan area than exists right here.
And we'll check in with our walking man, Eric Latham, who recently ran headlong into some bad weather.
I took cover because it was not only thundering and lightning, but it was coming down pretty hard.
All these stories and more coming up after these headlines.
Filibustering has become a local affair, it seems. Starting Monday, opponents of the Senate's proposed nuclear option spoke in defense of the filibuster for 24 hours straight while standing on the steps of the federal courthouse downtown. The event was organized by the group Move On PAC, the activist offshoot of MoveOn.org. Two dozen supporters kicked off the rally at noon and continued to speak right on through the night and the next day. This was to dramatically symbolize the filibuster as a minority party's last line of defense against legislative action, such as the approval of ill-favored judicial appointments. The current majority party's push to reduce the number of votes required for judicial approval is known as the nuclear option because, if passed, it would destroy all attempts to block nominees. Event organizer Rachel Bobbitt says she wants more average citizens to get involved.
I think people need to be aware of what's going on right now and aware that they have a stake in this fight.
And Move On PAC media representative Steve Vaughn stated the nuclear option's potential ramifications on filibustering of any kind.
If you kill the filibuster on judicial nominees, you've effectively killed it.
The demonstrators finished up at noon on Tuesday. On Sunday, May 22nd, GRTC bus fares will be reduced by 25 cents. This fare rollback counteracts a fare hike enacted last August, which raised the cost of riding the bus to $1.50. Mayor Douglas Wilder promised the rollback during his campaign last fall, and he's followed up on that promise by including the reduction in his recent budget. Richmond City Council approved the lower fares. Citing public transportation as the key to economic development, Mayor Wilder has emphasized his dedication to keeping public transit affordable and has made a long-term commitment to keeping GRTC rates low. Wilder has called cost-effective regional transportation a major priority for his administration. Some of Richmond's most creative citizens are about to leave for New York City by bicycle. Spokes for the Cure is a bike trip to raise funds for the Virginia Breast Cancer Foundation. 15 people are riding from Richmond beginning June 1st for 10 days. WRIR's Christopher Maxwell has the story.
Aaron Briggs, an organizer of Spokes for the Cure, joined with other people to bring together two ambitions.
I always wanted to bike to New York, or just do long-distance biking in general. I think it's really, really fun. It's always an adventure. And then my mom got breast cancer last July, so I figured the best way to incorporate both of them is do it as a fundraiser, wait till the following year.
The Spokes for the Cure team will ride to events and hope to inspire people to think about breast cancer. Aaron Briggs sees the ride as inspiration for people to have courage to be more active. Fundraising events have been planned along the way from Richmond to New York City. Organizers utilize unusual and creative approaches to fundraising. The most recent event was the Worn Again Fashion Show, held last week at Plant Zero in Richmond, where contestants competed for prizes by putting together fashionable outfits from donated clothes. Aaron, who has recently tackled bike repair, will also be selling rehabilitated bicycles at the next Chop Suey Bazaar Market on May 28th to raise money for the ride. The group has planned one last event in town before they leave for the Big Apple, held at the Nancy Reagan on the 29th. This one will have performances by several local bands, as well as a puppet show by another creative Richmonder, Anna Virginia.
We're just trying to get everybody together one last time and have all the riders together before we have to do our big ride.
For WRIR News, this is Max in Oregon Hill.
Yesterday, Mayor L. Douglas Wilder issued a statement denouncing the proposed city ordinance that would issue tax waivers for the proposed Performing Arts Center downtown. He calls the proposal, quote, unjustified, and that it will cost Richmonders tens of millions of dollars. Addressing the Leadership Metro Richmond Forum Thursday evening, Wilder recognized that his views might not be the most popular.
I do support the renovation of the Carpenter Center as quickly as we can. I do support making certain that we improve the Landmark Theater. I would hope that there's an opportunity for the foundation people, and I met with them yesterday, to get together and see what we can retrofit, redirect, and come up with in terms of meaningful from this point on.
We'll be talking more about Wilder's appearance at the Leadership Metro Richmond Forum later on in this broadcast. For WRIR News, I'm Dustin Richardson.
United Way is dedicated to improving the quality of life in the Greater Richmond and Petersburg region. Children need quality education, families need homes, and older adults need support. Your gift through United Way invests in a community prepared to meet everyday challenges and to support us when we find ourselves in need. More information on United Way can be found on the web at www.yourunitedway.org or by calling 771-5820.
Hear the many voices of Richmond on WRIR.
Shaco Bottom is not just a business opportunity, it's a neighborhood.
There's nothing there to stop the fire, so with the wind blowing, you pretty much had an inferno.
If you're not doing your job, you get fired. Now, if the mayor doesn't do his job, the voters can fire him.
Richmond Independent Radio News, each Friday at 4 p.m. Radio news for the rest of us.
At that point, spend a minute.
For WRIR News, I'm Lauren Ball. And now we check in again with our friend on foot. Last week, WRIR spoke with Eric Latham, a young Richmonder embarking on a walk across the United States. Since we last spoke, he has covered 115 miles. WRIR's Nancy Lee has this report.
Lightning, wildlife, and mountainous treks are just some of the trials Eric Latham has encountered along his journey. But when I spoke to him Wednesday, just outside of Charleston, West Virginia, he seemed in good spirits.
I am just passing, I guess they call it Hurricane, West Virginia, and I'm headed to Milton, West Virginia, which is about 5 miles up the road.
How are you handling the mountains of West Virginia?
Well, you know, after Hawk's Nest, which is in the center of West Virginia, absolutely beautiful, for West Virginia, it has leveled off pretty well. There's a few hills, but it's leveling off going into Kentucky.
I understand you got caught in a thunderstorm outside of Hawk's Nest.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I was walking from near Hilton Village, and the day was absolutely beautiful. And when I got into Anstead, I walked into the library to surf the internet and make a little post, and I came out, and it was as dark as can be. I took cover because it was not only thundering and lightning, but it was coming down pretty hard. So I took cover, and a guy walked by me and told me, made a comment that it was going to rain all night, and they were going to put me up in the Hawk's Nest State Park. They have a little lodge there if I could make it there. So when it started storming, I was about 2 miles away from Hawk's Nest and ended up deciding to just throw on the rain gear and walk through it and just hope not to get hit by lightning.
How are you physically holding up?
Pretty interesting. I started out at 188 pounds on April 14th when I walked off the beach in Nags Head, North Carolina, and I weighed myself in Montgomery, West Virginia the other day, this past Saturday, and I have lost 18 pounds.
Tell me about the people you've met on your journey.
Everybody's got a story to tell, I'm out there to hear the story. Of course, many of those people are affected by cancer in one way or another, and that's what this campaign's all about.
How much money have you raised so far?
I made a post this morning, and I think that we're just over $3,300.
Thanks, Eric. Good luck to you. To find out more about Eric Latham's adventure or chart his progress, check out his website at www.walkaboutamerica.com. For WRIR, I'm Nancy Lee.
Biodiesel, a plant-derived, renewable alternative fuel, is receiving much recognition and consideration nationwide. Biodiesel is being produced right here in Virginia, just a short distance from Richmond, and was the reason for President Bush's visit to the area this week. Douglas Faulkner, co-owner of Virginia Biodiesel Refinery, talked with WRIR about the sustainable energy source that's been getting so much attention. Sarah Barrett reports.
Can you imagine pulling into your local gas station to fill up, and along with all the usual choices, unleaded, leaded, premium, diesel, having a biodegradable, non-toxic, organic option? Not only is it possible, but there are gas stations throughout the country that already offer biodiesel as an alternative. Many times, experimental fuels are mistakenly classified in the media as biodiesel. Biodiesel is a vegetable-based fuel, usually canola or soy, that meets the strict, specific standards of ASTM D 6751 and legally registered with the EPA under Section 211 of the Clean Air Act. Only these certified fuels are considered biodiesel. Doug Faulkner of the Virginia Biodiesel Refinery gives insight into the biodiesel industry.
Biodiesel is made from soybean oil, which is all Virginia soybeans. The advantage of the product is that it is not imported. We don't buy soybean oil from Saudi Arabia or the Middle East. It's all bought from Virginia producers. The engineering advantage is that it will increase the life of the engine of a car. The environmental advantage is that it's clean.
Since the majority of passenger cars do not have diesel engines, this energy source has a more realistic implementation with public transit. Faulkner gives examples of nearby cities that use biodiesel for their public transportation systems.
Arlington County comes to mind, Harrisonburg comes to mind, Northumberland County on the Northern Neck comes to mind. There are a large number of them looking at it. It takes a little bit longer for an agency like that to make those decisions. They don't make them quickly, but when they do, they last longer.
The website of the National Biodiesel Board contains studies that show biodiesel burns up to 75% cleaner than conventional diesel. According to that statement, if GRTC buses were to fill their tanks with locally produced soy-based fuel in place of the dyno diesel they currently use, air quality in the city of Richmond could dramatically improve. In the meantime, Richmonders who support biodiesel due to a desire to reduce dependence on foreign oil or out of concern for the environment will have to endure that familiar black carbon cloud that emerges from the back of that familiar Richmond City bus. Just a few miles up the road, however, at the Virginia Biodiesel Refinery, a clean, eco-friendly alternative exists. For Richmond Independent Radio News, I'm Sarah Barrett.
Last week, we talked to Charles Poole, former member of the board of directors of the Oregon Hill Home Improvement Council. He discussed his fears, as well as those of many of his neighbors, regarding the proposed changes in the structure of OHIC. Current OHIC board members want to amend the Articles of Incorporation of the 29-year-old organization to make it a non-member corporation, effectively diminishing the role of Oregon Hill residents in the operations of OHIC. Yesterday, WRIR's Matt Beckwith talked to Ted Rochot, president of the OHIC board, to get more information.
You've been criticized for applying to work in Petersburg.
Applying to work. We haven't applied to work in Petersburg. Now I could just stop and give you the political thing and say, what, we haven't applied to work.
Okay.
And we haven't. What we've done, we have gotten criticism. I think I've been in the neighborhood for 8 years. I've heard the organization criticized and complimented since I've been here. So you're always going to have that. A lot of it is from misinformation.
But last night, WRIR obtained a letter addressed to Jeannie Tidy, executive director of OHIC, from the Historic Petersburg Foundation. The letter reads in part, quote, "The Historic Petersburg Foundation will strongly support OHIC's proposed project in the Ravenscroft area," end quote. To settle this discrepancy and to hear more of OHIC's side of the issue, WRIR's Dustin Richardson sat down to talk with Ms. Tidy.
Are you an Oregon Hill resident?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Where do you live?
I live in Petersburg.
Okay.
And everyone knew that when I was hired. And it's, you know, I know the neighborhood thinks that I'm behind a movement to move the organization to Petersburg, and that's just not true. That is a board decision. It is also a board decision where we go, and it's not about not expanding. The organization wants to expand into a lot of other neighborhoods, not just Petersburg, even if they decide to go there. They haven't decided where they're going. But we're also looking into Carver, Swansboro, Blackwell. There's a lot of neighborhoods that we have been working with LISC and the city on where we should go.
Could you tell me, what is LISC?
LISC is a local initiative support coalition which helps the community development corporations, both with funding and working in partnership to support staff. They do a lot of supportive things, development of staff and the organization, to bring the organizations up to legal standards and to help them, assist them to do more work. And we could not survive without their assistance, frankly.
When you say assistance, is this consulting, monetary assistance?
It's all of those things. It's consulting. They give us free people to help us with strategic planning. And this board had done a strategic plan before I came on board, which is also a matter of record.
Yesterday, when our reporter interviewed Ted Rochot, he asked Ted, did OHIC have any interest in Petersburg? Now, you've just told me that OHIC has interest in a number of neighborhoods. Is that including Petersburg?
Well, I don't want to rule out any neighborhood, but LISC has, as I said, encouraged us to go to other areas, and that was one of the areas they recommended. So I'm not going to tell you we don't have an interest, but there has been no decision made in the board, by the board, of where we're going at this point. I think we have to get through this process, and then there has to be some strategic planning by the board of where they're going to go in the future.
Tell me about this upcoming change in OHIC.
Well, actually, the upcoming change is exactly as the organization was originally intended, which in 1976, as it was laid out in the articles which I just gave you, it was a non-member organization. That non-membership stayed until 1990, when a group of Oregon Hill residents felt that it wasn't being represented, and they basically took it over and changed all the rules and the original intent of the organization. Now, after it went through those changes, in the 90s, there was a group of people who really wanted to get the affordable housing done in Oregon Hill. They felt like this was what the original intent of the organization was, to do housing and save buildings. So we're not really trying to change the organization to just take over OHIC and leave Oregon Hill. That is not the intent of this board. And what their intent is to honor their roots, but they want to continue the program and to expand it into other neighborhoods because it's been very successful, frankly. People do call us from other neighborhoods every day in Richmond asking us to take over a house that's going to be demolished, and we can't move. So this is to be able to allow the board to work in a fiduciary, responsible manner, which they have done, but it is very difficult. With the new regulations. And part of the new articles that we are amending are, this is a HUD regulation. What they mean by this is they want to see mixed income in neighborhoods now. And so we have been doing some affordable housing, but we've also done some houses that are sold market rate.
Oregon Hill has long been known as a blue-collar neighborhood. Do you think that this would change the nature of Oregon Hill and for the rest of the city as well? Do you think that mixed affordability in housing, do you think that would change the character of certain neighborhoods?
No, because the main focus of OHIC is to rehabilitate structures that are abandoned and to do infill housing. So although it helps raise up a neighborhood, I don't think it changes the basic intent of what we want to do. And by doing mixed income, we only do four or five affordable houses a year. We'll do two mixed income. So it's not like we're going out there just doing all market rate housing.
Where do you see Oregon Hill in the future?
I see it the way it is now. It's a wonderful neighborhood. You know, it's got a lot to offer people. It's right in the center of this area. It has ONA, which is a neighborhood association. OHIC helped create ONA and spun that off because they felt that they wanted to just concentrate on their original mission, which is the affordable housing, mixed income market rate housing. So I think it's important for people to know that. They're not trying to change the neighborhood or the fabric of the neighborhood. We like to keep the fabric of neighborhoods. That's very important to us. And the majority of clients we serve live in Oregon Hill already, are renters, and have moved into OHIC houses.
Tell me about the Richmond you see in the future.
I see a diverse, hopefully, make neighborhoods more diverse by having mixed-income neighborhoods. And I think that there are so many neighborhoods that are very much in need and have so many abandoned structures. But I do see those being able to take off with a force like OHIC who can work with them to help them shore up their neighborhoods. And by starting housing initiatives, it really makes a big difference in these areas that are impoverished. And part of that is because of the abandoned structures. So I think that is really the wave of the future. If we can get rid of a lot of the abandoned structures and make it a livable community for everybody who's there. And our main focus is not to move people out of an area, but to help maintain and retain people in the area. Just like our emergency home repair program, we're keeping that in place, and we continue to write grants for that. Although I haven't gotten one, we're still helping people. So I think it's very important for people to know that we want to maintain emergency home repair and to continue to help people in this neighborhood. It's very important to all of the board.
Will there be a new name for Oregon Hill Home Improvement Council?
Well, people have stated to us that they didn't feel that we should keep the name if we were going to move into other areas. And that was what we got feedback from the workshops that we had earlier this year to explain to people about the changes. Mm-hmm. And they said that they objected to us retaining the Oregon Hill name. So we thought we would shorten it to OHIC, but honor it by saying formerly known as Oregon Hill Home Improvement Council, Inc.
You've just told me that OHIC has interest in a number of neighborhoods. Is that including Petersburg?
Well, I don't want to rule out any neighborhood, but LISC has, as I said, encouraged us to go to other areas, and that was one of the areas they recommended. So I'm not going to tell you we don't have an interest, but there has been no decision made in the board by the board of where we're going at this point. I think we have to get through this process, and then there has to be some strategic planning by the board of where they're going to go in the future.
All right. Ms. Tidy, thank you.
You're welcome.
OHIC will hold its annual meeting on June 12th to settle the issue. On Thursday afternoon, Mayor Douglas Wilder spoke to members of Leadership Metro Richmond at a forum on regional cooperation held on the campus of Virginia Union University. Leadership Metro Richmond is a program that endeavors to develop local leaders who will take on an active role in the cultivation of the community and bring their diverse professional backgrounds together for a greater good. The topics at hand were numerous and far-reaching. The mayor addressed many current city issues and opened the room up to questions for the second hour of the presentation. It seemed like a good opportunity to ask some important questions of the mayor at the end of his fifth month in office, and the audience inquired on topics such as the possibility of a light rail project in Richmond, the need for greater efficiency in city government, and the role of volunteer, civic, and nonprofit organizations in the development of the Richmond community. The mayor talked about cooperation on both a regional scale and on a local level, and he emphasized the need for collaboration between the various groups and departments within the city. He also spoke about his definition of success, the need for and resistance to change, and his desire to hold every paid and funded entity in Richmond City accountable for what they do to earn that money.
I used to ask people when I was wanting to find out what they did in city government, I used to ask, what do you do? I stopped asking that. I asked, what do you produce? Show me what you do. Don't tell me. And to the extent that you show me and I can see it and measure it, then I'm in a position to determine whether we can do it together.
The mayor addressed some of the more pressing issues plaguing the city's schools. He stressed the need for students to know how to think and learn on a practical level, above and beyond an emphasis on standardized testing. He also acknowledged the call for a more comprehensive approach to vocational training prior to graduation. When questioned about his administration's plans for dealing with Richmond's truancy crisis, Wilder instead demanded justification for what he feels are unacceptable results from the school board and agencies assigned to deal with the problem.
I'm aware that Richmond has the highest rate of truancy in the state. I'm aware that some schools have a rate as high as 50%. I'm aware that they don't even take the roll call till 11:30. I'm aware that there hasn't been the cooperation that should have been held forth, and that's why I've said I'm going to put a truancy involvement in my office so that the buck would stop with me. Yours is an adjunct responsibility. Mine is a governmental responsibility, and that's why I want to end the silos that are out there with the numbers of entities that are involved fighting truancy or dealing with truancy, as you've described it, if they were the least bit effective, we couldn't have this problem as we have today. I hate to come down on you like that, but you set yourself up for it, asking me why I'm not with you. The question was, where were you when these kids were out?
By cutting their funding in his proposed budget, the mayor has forced groups and organizations outside of city departments who request financial assistance from the city to justify both their needs and their utility. Mayor Wilder explained his methods on the budget issue.
I talked with the chairman of the committee this morning, Bill Panley, and he says he would like very much to see an improvement in the budget process so as we can have more input from people. What I've done, for instance, and when I put my budget forth, most all non-departmental entities are put on the side, and it's particularly when you get to the health groups and the education groups, let them vouchsafe or someone within the government vouchsafe for their credibility as the need. Do you need these groups? Now, you heard him say you got 30 groups. That's just one person saying that. Richmond has more groups per capita than you can say prayers over. And I'm not demeaning these groups. But what I'm trying to say is when the time comes for the asking of the money and the dispensation of the money, we are limited. We have got to make certain that our fund, which we call it in state parlance, a rainy day fund, that we do create something like that that's only to be invaded upon emergency times.
Regionalism, which was the listed topic of the forum, was also addressed specifically. The mayor discussed the cooperation between Richmond and the surrounding counties and disclosed that he has assembled a committee to advise him specifically on the subject.
My colleagues are apt. They've been there longer than I have. They've been exposed to the problem. I think they recognize it as a new approach, a new opportunity. I come, they come, we have no agenda, we bring no baggage, we sit at the table, we talk, we agree on the things that we are going to agree on. Those things we can't, we'll find out why we can't and deal with them.
Mayor Wilder told the audience that he sees great potential in Richmond's future once the current outstanding issues start getting resolved. The mayor left little doubt that he is both aware of those issues and that he sees them as problems for the city and the citizens of Richmond to face together. That's it for this edition of Richmond Independent Radio News. I'm Lauren Ball. I want to thank all the volunteers who worked on this news program: Dustin Richardson, Sarah Barrett, Nancy Lee, Christopher Maxwell, and Matt Beckley. If you'd like to comment on anything you heard today or would like to volunteer, send us an email. news@wrir.org. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.